Hi there again, my name's Todd Fraser and it's my pleasure to bring you another special edition of the Essential Critical Care Podcasts from the 20th Annual ANZIC C2G meeting from the beautiful Noosa Heads in Queensland, Australia. And joining me on this episode is Dr. Stephen McDonald to chat about the ARISE Fluids trial. Stephen, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks very much.
So the ARISE Fluids trial deals with the issue of resuscitation of patients presenting with septic shock. Can we go back a step to the pathophysiology of septic shock and hypotension? Why do people become hypotensive?
So the conventional understanding why patients become hypotensive with sepsis is really a combination of both peripheral vasodilatation and, in some patients, myocardial depression. And the third factor would be increasing capillary leak, resulting in extravasation of fluid from the circulation into the interstitium.
So what are the recommendations as they stand right now about fluid resuscitation in sepsis?
So really the time-honoured approach to the initial resuscitation of the septic shock patient has been to administer a fluid bolus, the rationale being that you address relative volume depletion from vasodilatation and from the loss of fluids, but also optimizing preload. So under the understanding from the Frank Starling model, that optimizing preload, getting an increase in stroke volume to maximize cardiac output. And really that's evolved and been standard practice for many decades and has been currently the recommendations from the Surviving Sepsis campaign are that an initial fluid volume of at least 30 mils per kilo is administered in the first 3 hours in patients with septic shock. But the SSC also acknowledged that the evidence which underpins those recommendations is actually not high-level evidence and that there is a need for further research in this area.
So we heard some information yesterday from Shailesh Bihari about the impacts in healthy volunteers of administering saline, and you almost immediately see interstitial edema as an example. What do we know about the impacts of fluids in that group, in the septic patients?
So in sepsis, obviously, one of the early changes in sepsis is changes in the circulation, particularly the endothelium and the glycocalyx. Yep. So a leaky circulation is already the starting point, and we know that patients with sepsis have an activated endothelium as part of their inflammatory response. Yep. And part of the improved understanding of fluids physiology is it's not a simple macro hemodynamic issue. We're actually thinking a lot more about what's happening at a microcirculatory level. And increasing evidence would suggest that fluids have an effect on the glycocalyx. They cause degradation of the glycocalyx, that they essentially can be pro-inflammatory. And clearly, in an already highly inflamed milieu, the administration of a fluid, certainly aggressively, and overuse of fluids may actually be detrimental.
What do we know about the outcomes of patients who have had quite substantial fluid resuscitation in the context of sepsis?
So there's an increasing body of data from observational studies conducted in the intensive care and indeed from some clinical trials in that setting, which would suggest that a positive fluid balance is an independent predictor of, say, lung injury or organ dysfunction or indeed mortality in critically ill septic patients in intensive care units. The missing element really of our knowledge is what happens in the early stages before the patients get to ICU.
Right.
So typically, patients will be admitted to an ICU. Often, you know, they've had several liters of fluid given, you know, in the ED or on the wards, for example, before they get to the ICU. So really, the question is if are we actually causing harm by giving too much fluid early on, and should we be perhaps thinking about being more, not only more judicious, but actually thinking in terms of fluid as may actually not be effective for what we're trying to do, which is improve blood pressure and perfusion, may actually be counterproductive.
Yep.
We don't have the answer to that at the moment, and that's really what our trial is hoping to try and address.
So is the contention of the trial that we should potentially be using other avenues to achieve those endpoints, so things like early use of catecholamines and those types of things?
Exactly. So, and really the this is informed out of the data which does exist, which is really comes from low-income countries. So the FEAST trial, which everyone who's listening will be very familiar with, was published in 2011 and was initially actually designed to characterise the relative benefits of albumin and saline as initial resuscitation fluids in a resource-poor setting in Africa. But because the norm at that time in that setting was no fluid resuscitation, a third arm in the trial was included. And in fact, the surprising finding was in fact that the children who were randomised to either of the fluid bolus arms had increased mortality, a 50% increased mortality at 48 hours, and indeed out to 4 weeks. And even more interestingly was that the short-term improvement in perfusion and hemodynamic parameters that was seen in the in fluid groups actually nevertheless wasn't sustained, and the patients actually went on and died the excess of deaths due to shock rather than the neurological or respiratory complications of fluid overload. And people didn't really know what to do with FEAST because it's Africa, it's children, high proportion of malaria, they present late, they don't have ICU. How do we translate those into our setting? But really, that was the only data there was for a few years until the Zambian trial was published last year. Again, low-income country, a very different healthcare environment and etiologies of sepsis. But again, a protocolized approach to resuscitation in which patients received a higher fluid volume in the first 6 hours, significantly higher in-hospital mortality rate. So the clinical data is there that suggests that we perhaps in our setting need to look at this question. And so really what we're proposing to do in our trial is compare our standard approach to management, which is to give 2 to 3 liters of fluid prior to vasopressors, or indeed randomising patients to receive vasopressors earlier on with the view that that will be a fluid-sparing intervention and what we suggest may actually potentially, based on the African data, improve patient outcomes.
So one of the challenges that always comes up with these sorts of trials is understanding what the endpoints are to titrate your therapy to. Ultimately, what we're trying to achieve is tissue oxygenation and perfusion, but we know that they're not necessarily well connected with the macro hemodynamic markers that we target. How do you overcome that, and what will you be doing in your study?
So, and I think that's right. So I think one of the things that we need to be aware of is that we have an intervention bias as clinicians, and we want to fix the short-term physiology. And everyone feels much happier looking after a patient whose vital signs are normal. I think what we do is we have to step back a little bit from that and think, well, actually, you know, ever since the beginning of time, we've been dealing with infective insults. And mammals have developed good evolutionary responses to cope with infective insults. And so we need to be careful that we're not actually upsetting some of these important adaptive responses by our attempts to, say, for example, correct blood pressure by giving fluid where it's not really necessary. I think the key thing is that short-term physiology doesn't necessarily relate to outcomes, and I think in our trial the important things we want to look at are the effect on mortality, but I think also on resource use, duration of shock, duration of organ failure, time in ICU has important resource implications for the community, but also more importantly looking at long-term functional outcomes for patients as well. What is actually their functional status? What's the effect on their cognition? What's their effect on their ability to live independently? Because I think increasingly these are recognized as important patient-centered variables.
So you've got some pilot data, I understand, the REFRESH trial. What does that show you?
So the REFRESH trial, we really wanted to actually address the question of whether we could do this. Is it actually feasible to recruit a patient early in their clinical course and start them on vasopressors. So the REFRESH trial is a 100-patient pilot, 8 sites around Australia. The entry criteria were quite straightforward. The patient presents with primarily with infection. They're being admitted to hospital for antibiotics. And in addition, they have a systolic blood pressure of less than 100 after at least a litre of fluid administered. And at that point, they get randomised either to additional fluid, in other words, what we would normally do in practice, or to indeed start vasopressors earlier on. And we've shown in the REFRESH pilot that we can recruit patients. The mean amount of fluid pre-randomization is about 1.3 to 1.4 litres. So we've shown that we can actually recruit patients early on and starting them on vasopressors. Obviously, it's a pilot. It's not powered for clinical outcomes. Our primary outcome was a reduction in fluid volume administered in the first 6 hours. And we've shown that we can achieve that on a mils per kilo basis, a difference of about 15 mils per kilo on average between those two groups at the six-hour mark. And we've use this information, first of all, to prove feasibility, but also to inform the design of a larger clinical trial to really help us get a protocol which we think is clinically acceptable and is feasible and will allow us to actually achieve that separation in fluid volumes between the two arms of the trial.
So this is a really important trial to do, isn't it? Because there's a lot of resource implications associated with this. Is there going to be an economic evaluation associated with the trial itself?
Yes, there is. And I think that's a key question. And because one of the questions is, well, on the one hand, we can, reduce the volume of fluid that we're giving to patients, but there is also potentially that we're going to be starting patients on vasopressors after, as little as a litre of fluid. And that can be a challenging concept for hospitals, that we may actually be having to admit patients to ICUs who perhaps wouldn't necessarily get there. So we've worked really hard to try and define the cohort of patients who are sick enough that are likely to have to go to the ICU anyway. But we also have to be pragmatic and recognise that, that may not always be possible in every hospital. I think the trade-off is if you look at the preclinical data and you look at the African trial data, if actually giving less fluids results in a shorter duration of shock and requirement for vasopressors, then the net time spent in ICU might actually be overall reduced. And it has been something that we addressed very carefully in the REFRESH trial in the pilot, and we've been I think the close collaboration that we've developed between the emergency department and the ICUs in those hospitals has really helped to deal with some of these interface issues and important questions in a hard-pressed clinical environment where resources and beds are tight is how we actually manage the research imperatives in that setting. So we have to be realistic, we have to be pragmatic, but we think we've also shown that it can work.
So whereabouts is Arise Fluids up to right now?
So we have spent the last few months writing what we think is a clinically feasible protocol. We're about to submit a funding application to the NHMRC. We've had endorsement from the ASIM Clinical Trials Group. We're currently applying for endorsement to the ANZICS Clinical Trials Group, and I think those endorsement by those two peak bodies is really essential to the successful running of the trial. And we've been working hard on the ground, talking with our colleagues in critical care, both in emergency medicine and intensive care, and really the impression I get is that there's strong engagement in the emergency medicine community about this question. This is a real everyday clinical dilemma for emergency physicians, and perhaps with previously in the ARISE trial, that the research question may have been seen as something that was perhaps not an everyday clinical concern in the ED. The question of do I need to give more fluid to a hypotensive septic patient in my department is a dilemma that we face every day. And I think the engagement and the buy-in that we've had from the certainly the emergency medicine community, that this is an important question that we need to address. And I think in Australia and New Zealand, we are uniquely placed to actually conduct a definitive trial to resolve this.
So possibly a little bit early, but if people are listening to this podcast and are interested in getting engaged in this trial, how would they do so?
So what we propose to do is complete our processes of getting the formal endorsement from the relevant bodies. There'll then be expression of interest sent out through the clinical trials groups, both through ASIM and through the ICU networks. And, you know, within that, there'll be obviously at this stage, it will just be looking for, you know, expressions of interest, you know, the precise details and what's actually going to happen on the ground will obviously be something that we worked out at an individual level. But we're really keen to get people on board and to get in touch with the investigators, and we're happy to address questions that might come up. And I think this is a real fantastic opportunity for Australasian critical care to really collaborate together and demonstrate that we can address a question which is really, you know, of global significance and important for patients in terms of outcomes both here and around the world.
Stephen, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me again on this episode of the ANZIC CTG Noosa Meeting Podcasts. For more episodes, please check out my blog at essentialcriticalcare.com or search for Essential Critical Care on iTunes.